You ever hear a story so wild you'd swear somebody made it up? I'm Tail Dragger, and this is the Hangar on Radio Hangar. Today I want to tell you about an airplane that spent 50 years buried under 268 feet of solid ice in Greenland, and then somebody went and dug it out, rebuilt it, and flew it again. Pull up a chair. This one's a good one. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's go back to July of 1942. The United States has been in the war for about 7 months, and the Army Air Forces are trying to get fighters and bombers across the Atlantic to England. Now, you can't just fly a P-38 Lightning nonstop from the States to Britain. Not in 1942. So they'd island hop, fly up through Canada, over to Greenland, then to Iceland, then across to Scotland. They called it the North Atlantic Route, and it was brutal, even on a good day. On July 15th, a flight of 6 P-38 Lightnings and 2 B-17 Flying Fortresses ran into weather over Greenland. I'm not talking about a little cloud cover, I'm talking about a whiteout, zero visibility, winds howling, ice building on the wings, the kind of weather that makes you wonder why you ever left the ground. The pilots tried to push through, but it was hopeless. One by one, they realized they weren't going to make it to the airfield at Bluey West 8, so they did the only thing they could do. They put those airplanes down on the ice cap, all 8 of them. Belly landings on a glacier. Now here's the remarkable part. Every single crew member survived. 25 men walked away from those landings. They were rescued over the following days by dog sled teams and a Coast Guard vessel. But the airplanes? The airplanes stayed right where they were, on the ice. In the middle of nowhere, Greenland. And the ice kept falling, year after year, foot after foot. The snow packed down and became glacial ice, and those 8 airplanes just sank deeper and deeper into the frozen earth. For decades, people knew those planes were out there. Treasure hunters and aviation buffs would talk about them at air shows. Imagine it, 6 pristine P-38 Lightnings, the most beautiful twin-engine fighter ever built, just sitting under the ice, waiting. The P-38 was Lockheed's masterpiece, twin booms, twin Allison engines, a center nacelle with the pilot sitting between those two supercharged 12-cylinder power plants. It was fast, it was elegant, and by 1942, there weren't many of them left in flying condition anywhere in the world. The idea of 6 of them frozen in time was enough to make any warbird lover lose sleep. In 1981, a couple of fellows from Atlanta named Pat Epps and Richard Taylor decided they were going to go get them. Pat was an airport operator, a real aviation man, and Richard was a businessman who caught the bug. They figured the planes were probably sitting under maybe 10 or 15 feet of snow. They'd go up there, brush off the ice, maybe winch them onto sleds, and fly them home. Easy, right? Wrong. They went to Greenland, they searched, they used magnetometers and ice-penetrating radar. And what they found stopped them cold, literally. Those airplanes weren't under 10 feet of ice. They weren't under 50 feet. They were under more than 260 feet of solid glacial ice. In 40 years, the ice cap had swallowed them whole. Most people would have walked away right there, but Pat and Richard were not most people. They formed a group called the Greenland Expedition Society, and they kept going back, year after year through the 80s. They experimented with ways to get down to those planes. They tried thermal meltdown devices, basically giant copper heating coils that you lower into the ice and let the heat do the work. They called their contraption the Super Gopher, and it was exactly as ridiculous as it sounds, a big thermal probe that melted its way straight down through the glacier. By 1992, after more than a decade of expeditions, they finally reached one of the P-38s. She was sitting in a cavern of meltwater deep in the ice, crushed and twisted by the incredible pressure of the glacier moving over her for half a century. The fuselage was compressed, the booms were bent, the wings were mangled. This was not an airplane you could just polish up and fly home, but they weren't giving up. They chose the best preserved airframe, a P-38F model with the serial number 41-7630, and they began the painstaking process of cutting her into pieces small enough to fit back up through the shaft they'd melted. They brought her up piece by piece, crate by crate, over multiple expeditions. Getting each section to the surface through that narrow bore hole in the ice was like performing surgery with a crane in a blizzard. They shipped the pieces back to Middlesboro, Kentucky, where a restoration team led by a man named Bob Carden began what would become one of the most ambitious aircraft restorations in history, and I mean from scratch. They didn't have an airplane. They had a pile of bent, corroded, frozen aluminum. Every single piece had to be assessed, straightened, repaired, or replaced, the Allison. V-1710 engines were seized solid, full of glacial silt and corrosion. The instruments were destroyed, the control cables were shot, the hydraulics were gone. Bob Carden and his team spent years on this project. They tracked down original Lockheed drawings. They found old Allison engine manuals. They sourced parts from other P-38 wrecks and from manufacturers who still had tooling from the war. They hand-formed new skin panels to match the originals. Every rivet, every bracket, every hinge had to be right. Think about what that means for a minute. The P-38 Lightning was a complex airplane. Twin engines, tricycle gear, counter-rotating propellers, turbo superchargers, a sophisticated hydraulic system. This wasn't like restoring a Piper Cub. This was rebuilding one of the most advanced fighters of World War II from wreckage that had been crushed under a glacier. They named her Glacier Girl, and on October 26, 2002, more than 60 years after she'd belly landed on that ice cap, Glacier Girl flew again. The test pilot was Steve Hinton, one of the best warbird pilots in the world. He lifted her off the runway at Middlesbrough, and the sound of those two Allisons singing in harmony for the first time in six decades. Well, there were grown men crying on that ramp. I've talked to a few of them. They don't apologize for it either. I've seen Glacier Girl in person. She's based down at the Epps Aviation Facility, and she's been to air shows all over the country. She's painted in her original olive drab and neutral gray scheme, with the markings of the 94th Fighter Squadron on her nose. When you stand next to her, knowing where she's been, knowing she spent half a century entombed in ice and came back to life, it does something to you. It's not just an airplane anymore. She's proof that devotion and stubbornness can conquer just about anything. The total cost of the recovery and restoration? Estimates run somewhere north of $3 million, spread over more than 20 years of work. Some people would say that's crazy money for an old airplane, and maybe it is. But I'll tell you what, there are only a handful of P-38 Lightnings still flying in the world. Every single one of them is irreplaceable, and Glacier Girl is the only one that came back from the dead. Now here's where it gets interesting, because the story has a postscript that most people don't know about. Those other five P-38s and the two B-17s are still down there, still buried under the ice. The glacier moves, so they've actually shifted about 2 miles from where they originally landed. The ice has crushed them further. Recovery would be even harder now than it was in the 90s, but people still talk about going back. The dream doesn't die. There's a lesson in Glacier Girl that goes beyond aviation. It's about not letting go of something that matters. Pat Epps passed away in 2023. He spent the last four decades of his life chasing those airplanes. He didn't do it for money. He did it because he believed those machines deserved to fly again, that the history they carried was worth preserving. And he was right. Every restoration project I've ever seen has that same spirit at its core. Somebody looks at a pile of corroded metal and sees an airplane, sees the pilots who flew it, the mechanics who kept it running, the missions it flew, and they decide that story is worth saving. That's what keeps this community alive, folks. Most of this story comes from the excellent book Lost Squadron by David Hayes and from the Glacier Girl Project archives maintained by the Lost Squadron Museum. If you ever get a chance to see Glacier Girl at an air show, don't miss it. She's something special. I'm Tail Dragger. Thanks for spending some time in the hangar. Find us at radiohangar.com. Now go fly something.